Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone.
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left, hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachik is racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Well, welcome to our weekly GabFest. This is going to be the happiest one that we have had so far with our technical director, Luke Robbins. Television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Steve Berthume. I am Mike Farron. And Bert, at just moments before we took the air, the Major League Baseball Players Association announced that everything is resolved with regards to the health and safety protocol, and Major League Baseball is back. Summer training, also known as Spring Training 2, which I believe is son of spring training, will get underway on July 1st in every team's home city, with the exception of the Toronto Blue Jays, who I believe will either be doing it in Buffalo or Dunedin, Florida.
20 minutes ago, Mike, the union tweeted out, all remaining issues have been resolved and players are reporting to training camps. So baseball is back, and we finally get to say, hey, remember, it's not a marathon, it's a sprint. See what I did there?
I mean, we touched on this a little bit last week, right? I'm actually really excited about that aspect of it. I mean, I realize it is completely foreign to anything we've ever had in a Major League Baseball season, but man, like, the idea of having every game matter three times as much, I think is kind of cool. I think it has a chance to potentially make up for some of the energy that will lack from either no or few fans in the stands, depending on the municipality.
Well, you know, I've spent the day, as I'm sure most of us have, collecting bits of information, all of which was unofficial, some of which is now official. So I, Mike, am in position along with you to sort of outline where we are and what we know so far. Is that cool?
I think you should go ahead and outline it, because you're the gourmet around here, Ed. What do we know? Give us the 30,000 foot view first.
Ed, here's what we know. It's a 60 game season.
Yes.
that is weird. 60 game season. Players will report to summer training on July 1st. 60-game season starts July 24th. So that is 37% of your typical Major League season, largest reduction in a season length in professional sports history in America. Now, two things here, schedule and rosters. Now, this is a combination of a whole bunch of different reporting. Tom Verducci was saying that Bob Nightingale, I should say, said the schedule is expected in about 72 hours. So we should have that around about Wednesday, Thursday, hopefully. The general idea seems to be you will play, Diamondbacks, for example, will play four teams in the NL West, 10 games each. So that's two-thirds of the games the Diamondbacks will play will be against the National League West. You will then play your opposite geographic division, in this case the American League West, and you'll play four games each against those five teams. So that's 40 in your division, 20 against the AL West. That gets you to 60. So that's the scheduling that we know. We don't exactly know when and who and where they go. That will be determined later this week. Now, in terms of the rosters, they're going to start at 30. After 2 weeks, you go to 28. After a month, you're down to 26. And there is an August 31st trade deadline. Now, there's all kinds of other sideline-type stuff in terms of the rosters. Teams will have to list 60 players who will be eligible to play for them in what they're calling a player pool. So it's a 60-player player pool. So you've got your 40-man roster plus another 20. Maybe of those 20, 10 are your top prospects, the Dalton Varshos, Christian Robinson, and Alec Thomas's. So we may even get a chance to see those guys. But also, when you travel, you'll be allowed to take a taxi squad of up to three players. But if you take three on the road, one has to be a catcher. So that's pretty much where we are. The other thing that I thought was interesting was from Jason Stark, who tweeted out about an hour ago that Major League Baseball is considering Nashville as sort of a holding pattern, a holding pen, if you will, for two teams of unsigned emergency players. They're going to call it the emergency pool. So you'll have about two teams worth of free agents hanging around working out in Nashville. So if you need a body, you can either bring someone up from your player pool or you can sign him from Nashville. But keeping in mind, there is a trade deadline. It's going to be August 31st. So that's the general outline of where things are right now.
Yeah, and I can add a little bit more on that player pool. There is going to be some sort of minimum service time requirement for it. So it's guys that have had some big league time and maybe are unsigned right now. And there are going to be restrictions as to when you add them, as to whether or not you can end up releasing them or how it ends up counting against the player pool going forward. So there's going to be a little bit of restriction, but that's something that has been discussed over the course of the last few weeks and certainly makes some sense. I mean, it's you're going to need to be able to add players potentially if you do decide to have a number of prospects available. Maybe you don't feel that necessarily somebody is ready and they're not on your 40-man roster. Being able to bring in somebody who's more of a veteran gives you a chance to do that. There are a ton of other rules when it comes to the injured list, which is going to change a little bit. Both the 60-day will be reduced since we basically only have 66 days in the season. It's expected to be down to 45-day. Remember, this year we were supposed to have a 15-day injured list and a 10-day injured list, 15 days for players, 10 days for position players. It'll be 10 days all the way around, because now 10 days is almost a sixth of the season. So it really does limit you in that regard. So there's a lot of different things that are still at play here in terms of that. And there are some rule things as well, Bert, in one of which is the designated hitter in the National League. And now as much as that had been discussed going forward as part of the earlier negotiations between the league and the Players Association, this is only in play now, and it was part of the health and safety protocol, in part in an effort to try and keep pitchers healthy. And I think it makes sense, especially when you're going to play a third of your games as interleague, to be playing in the same roles. I'm not a DH fan. I like the National League style. I'm resigned to the fact that I'm going to lose pitchers hitting at some point. It's not going to be the end of the world for me, but it is something that I think does make sense based on this.
Yeah, you don't want to risk the health of the pitching staffs any more than you have to. I mean, look, if a pitcher gets an oblique injury, he might miss the season. It's 60 games. So any chance you can take to reduce those pitcher injuries, I think you have to do it. We're allegedly going to get to universal DH at some point anyway. We would have had it next year had the union accepted the offer from the ownership last week, but we don't get it for next year. We do get it for this year. No expanded playoffs either in the next 2 years, right? So we're playing under our standard playoff format.
Right, yeah. It'll be five teams from each league make the postseason, just like they have, despite the discussions over the course of the last few weeks, that they might go to eight teams in each league. And a lot of that had to do with the negotiation. And if you really want to get into the weeds on it, it's deep, right? Do you want me to go into the weeds on it? I can tell you.
No, let's stay out of the weeds. Let's enjoy the moment. You know, let's just all hold hands over Zoom here. And Luke is reaching on our producer. Let's just enjoy this. We've actually got baseball. We have dates, and we are set to go. July 1st is spring training, using a little finger quotes, and July 24th is opening day. Yeah,
let me ask you about this one, because this is one of the things. Yeah. One of the concerns that the doctors have had is about the length of time that everybody is at the ballpark, right? And in an effort to try and speed things along. It does appear that we're going to be using the minor league extra inning rule, which is, I believe, in the 11th inning. I'm not sure what inning they're going to institute it, but basically you're going to start an extra inning with a runner at second base and nobody out. And this
they do in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, very similar to that. Yeah. I think it's been first and second, right, in some of the international, but I don't remember if that's the same in WBC as what it's been in the Olympics. Right. It's a little bit different. I got to pull up some numbers for you that I think are interesting on it in terms of how it has shortened games in the minor leagues. But the first reaction on it to me is the first reaction to it to me is it's very similar to when the NHL went to the shootout. Wasn't a big fan. I like the idea of playing the game out to the end. At the same time, if you're going to try something like this right now, isn't this the time to do it, right? Like, let's see how it looks. Let's keep an open mind at it a little bit.
Try everything. Try everything. Why not? Something has got to be done about these 19-inning games. We've talked about this before. It's baseball
only
by attrition.
You hate long games.
No. It's a safety issue for the players. You know it is. It blows out pitching staffs. It doesn't do any good to have 300 people in the stands at 2:30 in the morning. It's just not good. It's not good entertainment. It's not good business. It's dangerous for the players. Something's got to be done. I don't mind ties. I'm a tie guy. I like watching the Premier League in England, the soccer. There's such a thing as a good tie. It's okay to have ties, but we're not going to get past that mentality. This, to me, is the next best thing. I don't mind it. I kind of look at it like I did the pitch clock. When I went to a fall league game and I saw a pitch clock, I was horrified, and by the third inning, I forgot it was even there. Really.
I remember you and I had that debate about it, too, and I was I was like, okay, this is unusual. And, like, I love – I'm still pro-pitch clock, so it's, I wish they would.
Yeah, and I'm fully on board, and I was very anti-pitch clock before. That's kind of the point. I know we're not big in America on keeping open minds. But let's just see how it goes. You might like it. Maybe, hey, you know, you're not there till 3 in the morning. Maybe you can go home, get some sleep, go to work the next day. It's not terrible. This is the time to try it. I agree with you absolutely on that.
So let me give you, J.J. Cooper from Baseball America had some interesting numbers on this. So this rule has been in effect in the minor leagues in 2018 and 2019. And now keep in mind, I'm going to use this terminology because a lot of times when you play doubleheaders in the minor leagues, there's seven-inning games, right? They play two sevens instead of a couple of nines. So games resolved after one extra inning from 2016 and 2017, there were 45% of the minor league games were resolved after that. In 2018 and 2019, with the new extra innings rule, 73%, so a huge increase. Here's some of the other data. 13-inning-plus games in 2016-2017 in full-season ball. So that's the top four affiliates for each team. There were 133 of them. In the last two seasons, there have been five. The number of 11-plus-inning games have gone from 800 in 16 and 17 to 347 the last 2 years. So it has had a profound impact on how quickly it ends the game. And I think that that's some pretty compelling data on that. If, in fact, that's part of the goal is to keep guys healthy, you're trying to keep them COVID-free, and getting them out of the ballpark quicker is one of the keys to it. I think that that's some pretty compelling information from J.J. Cooper of BA.
Especially when you're trying to play 60 games in 66 days. You can't have an 18-inning game in there anywhere. It's going to jam everything up. And we've got to also remember, this is an entertainment product. And I agree with you about the NHL shootout. It's gimmicky. It's like penalty kicks in the soccer. You don't love it. It makes you a little uncomfortable, and it's going to make you a little uncomfortable when we start it out. But give it a chance. You might like it. It might work out okay.
Speaking of things we might like or we might not, Steve Gilbert from MLB.com is going to join us in a couple of moments. We actually get a chance, Bert, for what seems like the first time in, 3 months of doing this show, like we can talk about the 2020 Diamondbacks and what we're looking forward to this season. Because let's not forget, when everything shut down in the middle of March, we were expecting this to be a team that competes for a postseason berth. We're going to talk about that and
what the
outlook looks like with Steve Gilbert from MLB.com. That's next. This is the D-Banks BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Well, baseball is coming back. Summer training will start on July 1st. And joining us now to help us preview the 2020 Arizona Diamondbacks season is long time, and by long time I mean really since Abner Doubleday first created baseball, long time baseball writer for MLB.com, the great-ish Steve Gilbert is on the line with us. Hello, Steve. How are you this evening?
Gentlemen, it's great to be back talking with you. This makes me feel like I'm right back at the ballpark poking my head into the broadcast booth before you guys go on the air.
Causing trouble.
To annoy you guys.
Always a highlight. Always, it's always fun to watch Brenly throw you out of the booth. I do enjoy that.
Well, I need to bring the entertainment. That's what I do. I can't write very well, so I just bring the entertainment.
Will you be able to do that this year, Steve, or will you have to stay 6 feet away from the broadcast booth at all times? Because for years I thought about a restraining order, but it seems like social distancing is taking care of that for us.
Oh, trust me, I've found plenty of ways around restraining orders in the past, so this won't be a problem for me.
All right, well, I know I've been reading some of your little stories on the MLB.com on the WWW, writing about the greatest this and the top 10 that, but what do you think are the number one issues facing the Diamondbacks right now, Steve, from a competitive standpoint, and can they win this division in a 60-game season?
That's a great question, but you know, I think that the fact that it's a 60-game season instead of a 162-game season works in their favor a little bit. I mean, I think we all anticipated over the course of 162 games that they would certainly be in contention for a postseason spot. But I think, you know, you look at the Dodgers' depth and you looked at, you know, their ability to go out at a trade deadline and you know, acquire talent, you thought, you know, yeah, it's probably tough to beat a team like that over 162 games. But over 60 games, I don't think that some of those advantages that the Dodgers have necessarily translate as well over a 60-game schedule. So I think this could really help the Diamondbacks, who are going to be competitive either way. But I think certainly this could help their division chances just in looking at it cursory right now.
Mike, I have a question for you related to that.
Well, you know, Steve's the guest right now.
I know. Well, it's all in the family
here.
He's used to ignoring me. Don't worry. Go ahead, Bert.
Thank you, Steve. Mike, can you summarize, at least from your perspective, the idea that some teams are built to win 162-game seasons and others are not? What is that? I've already read that about a dozen times today. And the Dodgers, by the way, are a team that a lot of people say are not built to win a 60-game season. They're built to win over a long six-month haul. So, Mike, in your mind, what does that mean and what's the difference?
Well, I mean, I think that that's wishful thinking with as much talent as Los Angeles has to say that they wouldn't be capable of winning in a 60-game season. I think any year outside of 2018, they've been pretty good after 60 games. I think what it is that there's a depth of talent in the organization that puts them in a position that when you inevitably lose a player for a period of time, your guys that you're dipping into AAA for are better than a lot of the other teams' options in that, because everybody over the course of 162 games is going to have some level of attrition. And so I think that's some of it. I think sometimes it gets lumped into a rotation where you might not have a ton of power arms, but you have guys that are very capable starters. And that's not really the case with LA. They have power arms. They maybe don't have the sexiest bullpen, and that might be part of where that comes in. But I would say for the most part, it has to do with depth overall. I mean, I don't know, Steve, if you agree that that's the case. I think very rarely do teams, I don't necessarily buy that as an argument, that I think the talented teams are the ones that are going to end up winning for the most part. It's just, it's a lot easier to you know, withstand those issues if the bad luck that you might have over the course of the year if you're a deeper organization.
Sure, I think so. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens over 60, because we're so used to 162 games that this kind of small sample size could really give a lot of teams chances that you might not ordinarily think of. So listen, I know that there's a lot of people out there talking about, oh, it's only 60 games, it's not 162, it's not a real season. Look, I'm just one of those people that's happy to see baseball on the field, and I think it's going to be kind of fascinating just to see how it all plays out in kind of a sprint as opposed to a marathon for a change.
Yeah, so with that, Steve, we're talking to Steve Gilbert from MLB.com. Like, what do you think are the most important things for a team? Do you think it is the things that we talk about being important over the course of a season, are they different overall than what you would have in a shorter year? Are you more interested in star power versus, overall talent? Or are you more interested in starting pitching depth than you would be over the course of or less interested in it than you would be over the course of a longer season?
Yeah, I think you can use your bullpen probably a little differently over 60 games. I think that, you don't necessarily need to have your starters pitching deep in the games to not tax your bullpen quite as much. And also, you know, we're talking about the possibility of expanded rosters, which gives you a little bit more depth in your bullpen. I think guys may not need the same amount of days off. I think we're talking about 60 games in 66 days. So that's an off day every 10 days. So I think that those are the kind of things that I think can help. I don't think having the horses in your starting rotation that are going to give you, you know, seven innings every night is necessarily going to be as important as having, you know, guys that can that you can piece together to get 27 outs.
All right, let me ask you about the bullpen point, Steve, because it's a 37% of a season. So you're playing essentially one-third of a season, which means every game counts three times as much as one normal game over the course of a regular year. Now, you mentioned the bullpen. If every game counts three times as much, do you think that managers are going to be more inclined to use their big guns out of the bullpen more often in high-leverage situations and then, in effect, almost in a shortened season, wear them down a little bit more than they would over the course of a six-month year?
I mean, that's certainly possible, and that's something that they'll have to watch out for. I think the temptation will be there because, like you said, I mean, especially when you're talking about 60 games, getting off to a good start is really important. So, you know, continuing to get off to that good start and want to push it, you want to keep riding your guys and riding your guys, that could end up biting some managers. I think that's going to be something where all these baseball ops departments and coaching staffs and everything are sitting down trying to figure out, okay, you know, this is something we've never seen in baseball history before. How are we going to approach a 60-game season?
We're visiting with Steve Gilbert from MLB.com. And by the way, while we've been talking, Major League Baseball has officially announced the training camps will open July 1st ahead of baseball's July 23rd and 24th openers, that those are the days that will be scheduled for the openers. 60-game season, mostly in the division, two-thirds of the games in the division, the other third in the other league. And I guess that changes the equation a little bit overall. But let's talk a little bit, Steve, about some of the strengths of this Diamondbacks team overall. I mean, we really felt like they were going to have a deep starting pitching staff over the course of this year. How do you view their starters in comparison to the other teams of the National League West?
I think they've got a very good starting rotation. I think you look at the top of that rotation. I obviously having, you know, Madison Bumgarner there, having Robbie Ray there, and even Zach Allen showed last year some of, you know, what he can do. So I think you start to look at that rotation, and even if you got guys that aren't necessarily pitching deep into games, those are some quality starters right there. That and the depth that we talked about guys that might not have made this roster coming out of spring training when it came to the rotation. Whether it was an Alex Young or whatever, now could be on this expanded roster and could be a guy that gives you some real quality innings, bridging the gap between, say, a starter and your back and bullpen guy. So I think that the depth could certainly still play well for the Diamondbacks, because even though it's not a long season, it does give them multiple options in that bullpen.
And they, I think, in the terms of the rotation, Steve, you get some additional rest for Luke Weaver coming off the injury last year, and maybe Corbin Martin at some point factors in, the youngster they got in the trade with the Astros for Zach Greinke, who's coming off to last July.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, who, you know, how they organize this. Do they, you know, do they have, you know, the rumored taxi squads and whatnot? You know, who do they decide to put on that, or who do they decide to make eligible for this year? And I think you'll start to, when you see that list, that will give you a feel for, you know, whether they feel a guy like that could make a Corbin Martin could make a contribution this year for them.
Steve, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer in this, but obviously there is a pandemic that is still going on as this is happening. And while we've been talking, the Denver Post just released a story that said that Charlie Blackmon and two other Rockies tested positive for coronavirus after workouts at Coors Field last week. They tested other players who were working out. Everybody else was negative. As we watch this, I mean, what are some of the questions that you still have about team or from teams and from the league about how they will handle positive tests in season?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, I guess, you know, you would have to assume that there's that they're going to kind of factor this in with whatever taxi squads or expanded rosters that they have, because it just seems like the way this virus is spreading, that it's going to touch a number of people. It's hard to believe that it wouldn't, touch a clubhouse at some point. Now, whether they mitigate that with the testing and quarantining people and how that all plays out, you know, I'm sure they can do what they can to try and limit it, but They have to, I'm sure, have a plan with all these protocols that says, you know, we're going to play through some of these things. And some teams might be without one of their star players for a little bit as a result of the virus. But we're going to, you know, try to continue to play through it until it's just not practical.
Well, there was some reporting on that today, and apparently there's going to be, Mike, you probably have more on this too, a separate injured list for COVID-related health concerns that will not have a timeline. It's not going to be a 10-day, a 15-day, a 60-day. There's going to be some sort of ambiguous COVID injured list, and also players can opt out and not play at all this season if they so choose. So I think they are trying to figure out a way to handle players who may test positive, keep them still in the system, in the loop, get them healthy, and get them back out there.
And I think that you know, they absolutely have to do that because, again, this virus doesn't appear to be showing any signs of slowing down. In fact, it seems to be the opposite. And you know, it's we head into the, as we get closer to the fall, too, that's supposed to be kind of a dicey time, too, for us as a nation, not just as far as baseball goes.
Hey, Steve, if everything gets going and we're rolling through a 60-game season, obviously the Dodgers are a formidable team, but outside of L.A., who in the National League West really interests you that the Diamondbacks are going to be competing against?
Well, you said the Dodgers. I'm curious to kind of see how the Padres do, you know, but one of the things that they don't necessarily have is the depth in the pitching staff. And I wonder if over 60 games they can compensate for that. And some of the young talent that they have is always kind of fun to watch. So that intrigues me. You know, the Rockies had a decent record, if I recall, after 60 mm-hmm. games last year. So maybe they're a team that, you know, playing at Coors Field and seeing how, you know, that can affect things over a short period of time. But I do really feel good about the Diamondbacks' chances in a 60-game schedule here, given the makeup of this roster. Not that I wouldn't feel good about them over 162. As I said, I would certainly have thought them as a postseason team, a favorite to make the postseason. But I really think this gives them a better chance within the division.
Yeah, I think the addition of those veteran arms in the bullpen, as you were talking about earlier, and Rondon and Guerra and some of the other young guys coming up, I really like the way they're stacked up, Mike and Steve. I don't see any way they don't compete for a division or a wild card spot. This is a really good team. We expected it to be in March, and there's no reason why that should change right now today.
And I think when you look at it, too, especially if it's going to be a situation where you're only playing teams in particularly the NL West, you know, there's some teams that the Giants are rebuilding. The Rockies have had their struggles. The Padres obviously have had their struggles. So that's another factor that could help the Diamondbacks when they're competing for a postseason berth is kind of the weakness of the division at the lower end.
Steve, we appreciate you taking a few minutes for us. I know you have to be really excited to go back to work, so it's good that you'll finally be earning your keep yet again. And here is hoping that we get a chance to see you in person, but maybe like with a glass wall between us.
Oh, that'd be good. Like in prison when they had talk on the phones through the glass. Can we do that? Can we do
like
that?
The Colonel in Boogie Nights?
I will call you on my cell phone and wave from the press box down to your broadcast booth to say hi to you guys. How's that?
Why should this be any different? Why should it be any different?
That's great.
Well,
Steve,
it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to bringing the joy to your booth again this year.
The first time.
Just win
everything.
Your day, buddy. Just win your day.
So, Steve, you guys later.
Stevie, take care.
Thanks,
Steve Gilbert from MLB.com joining us for a few moments. Bert and I'll talk a little bit more about this upcoming 2020 season and what it means for the D-backs next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Why are you smiling like that?
Oh, because somebody got my Colonel reference. Chris in Phoenix dropped me a note on Twitter that he got my Colonel reference and then dropped in, you'll appreciate this, the Robert Ridgely who played him, played Boris the Hangman in Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles
is equal
one.
In my eye.
Yeah, that's one I didn't get. I didn't. He punches the horse. I get it. Alex Karras. But
that's,
I didn't do
it.
Blazing Saddles. Yeah. I like Mel Brooks, but that one just didn't do it for me.
I'm working for Mel Brooks. Are you more of a, you're more of a 12 chairs kind of guy, the more serious art house Mel Brooks film?
No, I like the classic comedies. That's just
Young Frankenstein.
It's much more funny when in History of the World, where Moses has the 15 commandments and drops
ten,
one. And
ten commandments.
These 15. These 10. Anyway. Everybody's in a good mood, Mike, because baseball is back.
It sure is, Bert. We aren't going to bury the lead here. Major League Baseball and the Players Association have agreed to a schedule of 60 games. We should have the schedule by this weekend, 72 hours, right? So that would be sometime Friday evening, I guess. Is that 72 hours?
Bob Nightingale tweeted earlier that they have already sent the schedule to the union for approval, so they're ready to go on this.
Yeah, they just—it's going to take a while to get it out to publicly, I think. But yeah, that's not a surprise. They need to get the union to write off on a couple of things with it, I'm sure, and so we should get something relatively quickly here. All right, let's talk a little bit about this team. I mean, we hit on some with Steve Gilbert, and thanks as always to Steve for joining us. But
yes, thank you, Steve. Some of you.
wasn't doing anything else.
He's
Karen
the best.
Was thrilled
on,
that he just... wasn't hanging around tweeting or whatever it is that he does
we like
in his spare
kid.
Time.
We like
so, you know, obviously the starting rotation depth was something that we were focused on over the course of this year. We had some really nice performances from guys like Alex Young. And like early in the season, I think it's going to be important to have that because the way the rosters are going to work is you're going to have 30 on opening day. 2 weeks into the year, you're going to be a 28, and then the last basically month of the season, you're going to be playing with a 26-man roster. So having those extra innings early are certainly going to help. But if your rotation is healthy, I'm not sure that it's going to be near as important in the month of September. Where I'm curious is how good an offensive team this is going to be, because I think you would agree with me that at times last year, it was not a consistent group. And being able to find a little bit level of consistency, I think Mike Hazen talked a lot about that last year and into the winter, like finding a more consistent offensive group, I think that's what the real hope is. And I think that's one of the things that they needed. Pitching was fine last year. They needed something to take them to push them into the playoff race was going to be a better offensive squad.
Well, it was a little thin at times, especially once you get into August and September. You might have a game where, you know, Josh Rojas is in the outfield with Gerard Dyson and Tim LeCastro, and sometimes it gets a little thinner than you'd like when you're up against the Bellingers and the Justin Turners and all those guys. But when you look at this lineup now top to bottom, let's start for me with Christian Walker, and it was really fun to watch him improve over the course of a six-month season last year. He grew more and more patient, tapped into that power in big spots, ended up actually with a higher OPS than Goldie did in St. Louis. So I expect Christian to have a very solid season, even though it's only 60 games. You've added Cole Calhoun into the mix, so you'll have some consistency there in the outfield. They expect him to play against lefties. You've got Peralta healthy and ready to go with a contract extension. You've got Ketel Marte now settled into second base mostly every day. And we know what a great defensive combo he is with Nick Ahmed, who had a very good offensive year. You add Starling Marte to the outfield mix as well. Carson Kelly's development continues. He's going to be more solid offensively. So I feel really good about this team. And you've got some really solid bats coming off the bench. Now you can – Jake Lamb's going to play. Kevin Crone's going to play. You've got the DH. We've seen what LeCastro can do, how he can electrify a situation. You've got Stephen Vogt backing up Carson Kelly. We know he'll hit. I like the offensive mix of this ball club. I really do.
I think, you know, one of the things, in addition to finding more consistency, was finding better production against right-handed pitching. That was really one of the Achilles heels last year. And adding Calhoun to the mix and signing Stephen Vogt, I think, were big for that. And getting a bounce back from Jake Lamb is going to be imperative. And to your point, Jake likely will see a significant amount of plate appearances and probably more, at least by a percentage, than he may have over the course of the season, because you would have to think that at least against right-handed pitching, he's your primary designated hitter. And I thought the last, and I realize that it's now 3 months ago, it's only been 3 months, it feels like a lot longer, that towards the end of spring training before it got shut down, you started to see Jake get his groove back. His swing looked a lot like it did in his all-star season in 2017, and that got me pretty excited about the potential for production from him. I think he's an important guy because if he's going to see the bulk of the DH at-bats or play, you know, at first or third when somebody else DHs, I think it's going to be – he's going to be a very important guy for this offense because he has the physical skills and the power to impact this team.
Well, we've seen that. We've seen him have, a 29-homer season and a 30-homer season. He's been a 100 RBI guy. One of the great benefits of our job, and one that I don't imagine we'll get the opportunity to use this year with all the COVID-19 restrictions, is the little conversations that we get to have on the side of the bullpen mounds or the side of the batting cage with coaches and other players and everybody. And, you know, when I walked around and talked to Darnell Coles and Torrey Lovello and a bunch of other people, scouts, and, you know, you ask the same questions. Who do you like? What are you seeing? And to a man, everybody said Lammer. Everybody was on Jake Lamb. He looks all fixed. He looks tremendous. And that was almost unanimous. So I was very excited to hear that from different guys on different days. Everybody was thrilled with what they saw from Jake.
Yeah, and so I think that's an important one. And the other guy that I think is, obviously, Ketel Marte is going to be really important. I mean, the guy was fourth in the MVP last year. He is the most dynamic player that they have. He has a chance to move into, even in a shortened season, move into that next level of stardom with a repeat performance. And obviously the total, he's not going to hit 30. If he hits 33 homers in 60 games, yeah, he'll win the MVP award. I'll go out on a limb and say that right now, right? So, like, I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think you can see star production. But to me, I think the biggest acquisition of the winter was Starling Marte. And I think he is one of the more underrated star players in baseball. He is a very good defender. He is an excellent offensive player. He works extremely hard. He obviously has been dealt with some horrible off-field tragedies over the course of the last couple of months with the death of his wife. But he is a really important player as well, and he has a chance to change to change the offense for the better, in that he's a guy that hits righties and lefties. He gives them somebody who's stable in center field and can really do damage at the top of the lineup.
He can be one of those guys that hits you the leadoff home run. He's 31 years old. This is his age 31 season, so he's still very much in his prime. And if you look at the numbers from a terrible season that the Pirates had last year, he had career highs across the board, 23 homers, 82 RBIs, slugged over 500, 60 extra base hits, 2 gold gloves in the outfield. I thought that was a tremendous acquisition, and a guy that we talked about this earlier that looked like he fit in here from the very first day. When you first saw Starling Marte in spring training, it looked like he'd been on this team for 3 or 4 years. It seemed to be a perfect fit, and that's very, very important, as we know. I'm thrilled about that acquisition. I still am. He's been through hell. God bless him. The horrible, tragic, sudden death of his wife earlier this year. Hopefully he's had time to process that. I'm quite certain that's something you never really do get over. But now he's got his teammates to help him do it, and he's got something else to focus on. So hopefully that's a blessing for him.
Yeah, it's a guy who I think will quickly gain the appreciation of Diamondbacks fans. And again, I mean, just I don't think that people outside of who really didn't focus on the Pirates over the last several years saw how complete a player he is and how he fits in this. And I think you made a point earlier too that's worth reliving, and that is that this is a very good defensive team, especially in the middle infield, and with Ketel Marte then our two-time Gold Glove Award winner and Nick Ahmed up the middle, I think it's a huge benefit. And if you continue to see some strides from Carson Kelly behind the plate, you really have a chance to lock things down defensively, and that's been one of the hallmarks of this team, you know, since Torrey Lovello came on. I mean, in the three previous seasons, they have been very good defensively, and it's helped them to win a lot of close games. He very much takes that old six-pack West Coast college baseball style to heart in terms of how important defense is.
And you've got Gold Glovers at each corner outfield spot now, in Peralta in left and Calhoun in right. Christian Walker was a Gold Glove finalist at first base last year. And for me, one of the really surprising things, and I'm not sure that's even the right word here, but it was really, really fun to sort of get on my own personal radar how good a defensive player Eduardo Escobar is. He is very underrated, I thought, defensively at third. He's got an absolute cannon for a throwing arm. I thought his defense was one of the most pleasant surprises of last year, at least for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously Escobar being a switch hitter with power from both sides, and as you saw the improvements from the left side as the year went on in his ability to drive the ball, I thought was really important as well. I mean, he had a case to be an all-star last year, and another key guy to this offense, but that he's coming off a career year, and much like Ketel Marte, you need to see him not necessarily repeat it, but you need to see that a high level of production out of him if you're going to get to where you want to go.
That, for me, Mike, is one of the top two or three questions about this 2020 D-backs ball club. Can Eduardo Escobar have the type of numbers he had last year? Can he be that level of offensive player? Now, he's not going to hit 35 homers and 118 RBIs in 60 games.
If he does, but he'll win the MVP award.
It'll be like a record or something. But he's got to be, if they're going to be where we think they can get to, he's got to be at or close to that same level again this year. I think that's really, really important. We'll see if he can.
Yeah. But I think that there's, you mentioned earlier in talking about the way the rosters may shape up, there are a couple of players that are not on the 40-man right now that I think are going to be important. There's some of them are veteran guys. I think John Jay is a guy that still has a very good chance of being on this roster. I think that even though they are pretty left-handed in the outfield, I mean, he is a guy that certainly provides a lot of leadership skills, and we loved having John here in 2018, and I know that they really value him in the organization. But another is Dalton Varsho. And Varsho, again, another left-handed bat, but can play the outfield, can catch, runs well, is a very good hitter. And I am really curious to see what happens. I hate to assume, but if he is part of that group of 60, and I would think that he probably is, I would be very curious to see how he performs and whether or not he gets his opportunity. He needs to be added to the 40-man roster after this season anyway because he was drafted in 2015, and you wonder if he gets a chance to potentially impact this roster because he has a chance to be a very dynamic offensive player. We got a ringing endorsement from him from Josh Barfield, the D-backs farm director, a week ago.
Yeah, he's really fun to watch. We've seen a fair amount of him in the fall league a couple of years ago. Saw him this spring. Dynamic is the perfect word for him, a catcher who can really run. He's not a catcher who runs good for a catcher. He's just a good runner. He can bunt. He can hit home runs. Where he ends up long-term defensively, we'll see. Right now, he's still a catcher. But I would expect him to be in the mix somewhere because if you figure the player pool of guys who will be eligible is 60, so that's the 40-man plus another 20, and of that extra 20, you got to figure somewhere around 8 to 10 would be guys that you would consider prospects, quote-unquote, and Dalton Varsho is probably at or near the top of that list.
Yeah, well, I think he's in a little bit of a different situation, though, because I think if you look at him, he's a guy that would have been in – if this had been a regular season, he would have opened in Reno, most likely.
Yes.
And you may have been talking about him at this point if he'd been off to a good spot or if you'd needed a start or if you'd needed another left-handed bat, needed an offensive punch, that this may have been about the time that he was coming up. I think those guys are considered part of that group for the season, whether they have major league experience or not. What's interesting in those taxi squads that teams have is how many of those extra spots end up being spent on guys like you mentioned Christian Robinson earlier. So Robinson or Geraldo Perdomo, Thomas, right? Like those guys who are high on the prospect list, Corbin Carroll, but a little bit lower down in terms of their experience, and how many of them are brought in to be around players that are more advanced than them to try and see, to give them experience, because otherwise they're not going to get a chance to play. There have been rumors about what might happen in the fall with, chances for teams to be able to get players together, but there's no guarantee. I mean, we're really in uncharted territory here, and I think that's what's going to be interesting. When we get these rosters on Sunday, it's going to be really fun to pore over them for all 30 teams to see how many we have there. I want to get your take on some of the things that you think are most important to getting off to a fast start, because a slow start's going to kill you this year. For all those years that I complained about callers who would call in and say, like, the team's 3-6, to start a baseball season, and they'd be like, just like relax, like we got a long way to go, like this is a marathon, not a sprint. Now 3-6 could be panic time because you're almost a sixth of the way through the season if it happens.
Every game counts three times
it's
as much.
Pretty great. So I want to get your take on what you think are some of the keys to getting off to a fast start. That's next. This is the D-backs BP show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Celebrating that baseball is back. July 1st will start. Is it summer training? Do you notice that neither spring training this year will have happened during spring?
Because the other spring training was in the wintertime.
Yes.
Yeah. And now it's in the summertime.
Hot fun.
Well,
in the summertime.
It's you know what it is? It's climate change.
I know. I think July is just summer.
Barry. No, I think it's climate change.
Pretty sure summer started 2 days ago.
How can you tell? Shorter. It's 111.
Ah, yeah, but it's only going to be 105 next week. It's fine.
Oh, nice.
This is
probably wear long pants. Remember pants?
I am wearing pants right now.
Why?
Because I always wear long pants.
Why would you wear long pants? It's 111 degrees,
it
and you're just basically working at home in your little office.
Yeah, it's fine, but I want to. I mean, I don't want to embarrass my wife if I have to walk by one of her Zoom calls.
Well, I'm not saying you shouldn't have something on. You have your athletic shorts on, your nice, cool summer shorts, something.
I mean, but I wanted pants, to be. That's... I mean, listen, I dressed up for the event today. I wore my baseballism T-shirt with the beast on it. You know, like just trying to
for the event.
The right
is
thing.
This the event? If this is the event, you know it's a pandemic. Right?
This sounds like a Foxworthy bit at this point. You know it's a pandemic.
It might just be in a pandemic.
Give me a key. Give me one of those patented Berthume keys to getting off to a fast start.
Has that patent come through yet? Still waiting on that.
Because patent pending. Those patented keys for a fast start to the season.
One thing that jumped out at both of us when Torrey was on with on the radio earlier with Burns and Gambo this afternoon doing his 2:30 Tuesday hit, he said that they are ready to go. There's an inventory there already with pitchers having thrown, and he anticipated that starters would be able to go 5 or 6 innings right off the bat here. So you're, and I went, whoa, really? Because I expected, you know, okay, 2-3 innings, it's going to be like having an opener every day for 2-3 weeks, and then maybe you'll get a guy up to 5 innings, and that'll feel somewhat normal. He says they're going to have their guys ready to go from day one. That, to me, with the quality of their pitching staff and the depth, that's a big advantage.
I thought that was a really interesting comment, and it definitely caught my attention. Because that's something that we've been talking about a lot is, okay, well, who's got the depth to be able to handle those first couple of weeks as you build up? Because we're trying to compare it to the last time we had something similar, which was 1995. And with a 3-week spring training, albeit one that was happening at the beginning of April, that's the way teams handled it. I think the biggest key, Bert, is to score more runs than your opponent on a given night. And I think if you you have a pretty good chance of winning early in the year.
You must have gone to some Sabre conferences or something.
It's all about the points. They call them points
in
baseball, don't they?
I got
only have 30 seconds.
They do now. Okay. By the way, Joe West, I found this this from Andrew Baggerly today. Joe West needs 60 games to become have umpired the most games in Major League Baseball history.
Really?
He needs 60 games to break the record, and we now today have a 60-game season. So the Cowboy will be doing every game, I imagine.
That is interesting.
And he'll become the all-time leader.
And that is it for us. Baseball is back. For Luke Robbins and Steve Berthume, I'm Mike Farron. Thanks for joining us for the D-backs BP Show.